Today is March the 11th, 1982. My name's James Cross, and I'm interviewing Major C.E.C. McNeil.
Okay.
I can, This is on now?
Yeah. There are a couple of things I'd like to mention in my previous talk. But one was the training in England. Mm-hmm. I think I failed to mention that the route marches we went on, which were numerous, and they were the ones that put us in such excellent conditioning for the landing on D-Day. And then there were the rifle ranges, the 100 target range at Bisley, which was a fantastic thing, the 100 men firing at one time. And then there was the battle drill courses. There was one thing where my first experience with the Canadian Army in England was concerned was in 1941, while we were still at Salamanca Barracks in Aldershot. This would be in September. I was appointed an umpire for exercise bumper, which was the big exercise which first and second Div and the British British Corps were taking part in. I umpired the Royal Canadian Regiment at that time. We were picked up by a truck in Aldershot and dropped off down somewhere in the south coast of England. I never did find out where it was, and from there on we just moved north with the battalion up to Luton, which is north of London, north east of London. That was quite an experience. I saw an awful lot of the country then, which I hadn't seen or didn't even see afterwards, because this bumper exercise went north of London, which whilst the 3rd Div was there, we very rarely went into that direction at all on our exercise. They were all on the south coast. The other thing I don't think I mentioned was the battle school at Rowland's Castle, which is north of Havant, in near Portsmouth. That was an excellent training school, which I think most officers and senior NCOs attended. Later on, I said that I went from Petawawa the war ended. I went from Petawawa to Nanaimo. Actually, we went to Vernon first, and then to and I spent one night in Vernon, and then went to Nanaimo. Vernon camp had closed down when they posted me there. And there at Nanaimo, I was in charge of a company of men who had been trained for the Pacific, and didn't have enough points to be discharged, so we had to set up a training, keep them amused, really, or busy so they wouldn't get into trouble. We set up a woodworking shop where they could men could make anything in wood, and they turned out some excellent desks and tables and bookends and things like that. Jack Evely from Medicine Hat was in charge of it, and I was his second in command, and Rod Haig Brown from Camel River was also in there with us. during this time, in the early spring of, this would be early spring of 46, yes. The men were given at least I was put in charge of a company of men, and we went up tree planting through the Alberni area, and we did a month there, and then came back and had a month back in Nanaimo, and then went to Massachusetts Lake, which is near Cowichan Lake, and did tree planting there. We planted trees for, I think it was a month at a time, and without a break, really. We had Sunday off, but we worked Saturdays now, because they were so far away they couldn't do anything. There was no near a small town near them, which was also gave a good idea of what the country was like. I also forgot to mention that when I was in Nanaimo at Christmas 1945, I was sent to meet the 1st Battalion, Canadian Scottish, at New York. They were returning on the Queen Mary, and I was detailed by the regimental headquarters as Colonel Urquhart, or at least I was asked by Colonel Urquhart if I would like to do that, which I thought was quite an honor. And so I then took the train and arrived in New York on Christmas, well, the 23rd of December, and spent Christmas Eve and Christmas Day in a hotel. And then the battalion arrived, I think it was on Boxing Day, and I met them at the dock, and told them what was going to, the plans for their arrival in Victoria, so that they knew what was going on. The CO at the time was Colonel Lieutenant Colonel Whiteman, and his 2IC was Peter Ramsey. I also arranged for the press to interview the various members of the battalion who had won decorations during the war and send their messages back to their parents and letting them know they were well and things like that. It was also my responsibility to arrange for the disembarkation of the men and the, explain to them the arrangements when they arrived in Victoria. Mm-hmm. We arrived in Victoria. It was a train trip from New York right through to Vancouver. They disembarked and marched from the train to the Princess, one of the Princess boats, which was chartered for it, and they arrived in Victoria, I think about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and marched from the CPR dock to the armories, where they were met by their families, and they received a lunch or a supper, so some went back to, and from there they dispersed to various parts of Canada. After this was over, I went back to Nanaimo, where we still had the task of keeping the low point soldiers amused. And it was about this time that my task of planting trees at Alberni and Masachi Lake took place. We gradually reduced the strength of the men on the nominal roll, and I was appointed as claims and investigating officer for MD 3 in Vancouver, MD 11 in Vancouver. And I was there until the 1st of September, sorry, the 1st of October, when I was sent to the 3 PPC, to 1 PPCLI in Calgary. Can I shut this off? As chief instructor at Fort Churchill, I was also the officer commanding training wing, and I was responsible for training men of the Canadian Forces, or the Canadian Army, in survival in the Arctic, and also moving and fighting in the Arctic. This was very interesting. It was the first time, I was the second chief instructor. The other one had been up there previously 1 year, but it was only our second year of doing this type of training, and so a lot of it was experimental. We were testing a lot of equipment and clothing to find the most suitable equipment for that work. We would we also had groups of officers and NCOs who were sent up to be trained as instructors, so they could go back to their units and teach the men in the units how to survive in the Arctic and the best ways of preparing food and things like that. I had approximately 16 months as the chief instructor, and then I, as being a single person at the time, you were only allowed to spend 1 year in the Arctic if you didn't have, and even if you were married, you were only allowed to spend a year there if you didn't have your family with you. So I was then sent back to the warmer climates, and I was replaced by a Major Stan McDonnell from the Royal Canadian Regiment. This meant, at this time, all promotions and that were frozen in the Canadian Army, and so were the vacancy. So I had to go and replace Major McDonnell at the Royal Canadian Regiment, and I arrived there in April 48, as a company commander. In the meantime, I got married, and so I arrived there with a wife. The RCR was at that time stationed in Brockville, in the old officer training center, and because there were no married quarters, there were a few H huts had been made into divided into three for married families, but I, being a newly married officer and no children, had no chance of getting to those, so I had to search for a place in Brockville. Stayed in Brockville to, I think it was about October when we left Brockville for Petawawa, which was to be at the permanent camp of the RCR. During that time, I attended various courses and trained a company of infantry. It was almost peace. Well, it was really peacetime training. There was nothing very much to do. We did several times support the RCM, the Ontario Provincial Police in searching for escaped prisoners or things like that, or wood searching and that. But it was nothing really, I don't think, exciting at that time. I took an astro navigation course at Rivers, as I had also been detailed to command Exercise Sundog 1, which was to take place in the Arctic in February of 1950. February 1950. We arrived in Petawawa. I think this would be... Yes, this would be 49. Yes, I left Churchill in September 49. Uh-huh. I left Churchill in April 1949, went to the RCR, and then we moved to Petawawa in October, November 49, somewhere in that area. And I had to then proceed to train my company in survival in the Arctic, as they were the one that was to do Exercise Sundog. Uh-huh. And unfortunately, the weather wasn't that cold in Petawawa that year. We had a lot of snow, but it still wasn't cold. But they got the basic part of it. And then in early in January of 1950, the company entrained for Churchill. And 5 days later, we arrived in Churchill. And we spent 2 weeks in teaching the navigation and survival in the Arctic and their use of their equipment and clothing. And then we did a month exercise, which took went south of Churchill, and then across to the eastern shore of the Hudson Bay, and then north up to Cape Churchill, and then back into Fort Churchill. This took a month, as we were, although we were in over-snow vehicles, a lot of our training was movement in the north and fighting in the north, and also making a movie of the tactics of the of tactics to be used in the north. During this time, we also had made a movie of evacuation, medical evacuation in the north, under Major Smiley, who was the medical officer, and his group did some very good evacuation. Well, had some very good evacuation problems and maintenance, being picked up by aircraft, light aircraft, and transported back to the base hospital. On the on the completion of the exercise, we returned to Churchill and spent a week there getting cleaned up and putting equipment away, sorting it out, and then I returned to Petawawa with the company. We considered the exercise to be a success, at least the powers that be considered it. And I then went to Ottawa to spend 2 to 3 weeks writing up the exercise, all the reports, and editing the movie that was made, putting the captions in it, and explaining what was going on. I returned from Ottawa and then spent approximately a month or so with the RCR in Petawawa doing the normal training. And then I took some leave to come back to Western Canada, to my home in Victoria. Mm-hmm. And at this time, I was also posted at the School of Infantry as an instructor in tactics wing. And so I left the RCR, and then this would be, I think, the 1st of July of 1950. Drove to Victoria, BC. Spent my month's holiday here, came back to Camp Borden, where I went as an instructor in tactics wing. And in November of 1950, I was posted to 3rd Battalion PPCLI in Fort Lewis, leaving my wife and at that time one child back in Petawawa, in Camp Borden. We arrived in, at least I arrived with several other officers at Fort Lewis to be met by the CO, who was Colonel Corbo, and we were told we were forming a third battalion, which had never been formed before. And the nucleus of that battalion was to be those who had been left behind by the 2nd Battalion when they went to Korea, and the sick and the lame and the lazy, as well as those who were medically unfit. We had quite a time. We did get a battalion formed, and then so once we get some men trained, they were sent to Korea as reinforcements. And this continued throughout our sojourn in Fort Lewis. Brigadier Rockingham was commanding the brigade, along with our battalion in Fort Lewis was the 2nd Battalion, the Royal Canadian Regiment, 2nd Battalion, the Van Dew Regiment. In April, I think it was April of 1951, the brigade headquarters and the 2nd Battalion RCR and 2nd Battalion Van Dews left for Korea to form the Canadian Group Brigade. And the 3rd Battalion, and we then left for Wainwright after clearing the camp. When we left for Wainwright, we took with us all the odds and sods from RCR and Van Dews who hadn't gone over with their 2nd Battalion, the deserters and various things like that who came back. And so we arrived in Wainwright with a conglomeration of the Canadian Army, Army Service Corps, everyone you could think of was our battalion. When we arrived in Wainwright, there was a 2nd Battalion, RCR, a 3rd Battalion, RCR had been formed, and a 3rd Battalion, Van Dews, and so we were able to get rid of all these, those men from our battalion and sent back to their own. And then the Army Service Corps and the REME Medical Corps were all ready there to form another brigade. We continued to train in Wainwright throughout that summer. And till about October, when we were then told we were going to Camp Borden. In the meantime, or during this training, we were still sending reinforcements to Korea, which would be about every month. It'd be a call for either men, or men and officers and NCOs to go to Korea. So we were sending. So as we get men trained and a good battalion formed, we would suddenly lose them and have to start all over again with another group of recruits coming in. And in the meantime, also, I had been back on leave to Camp Borden and had been told that there was no chance of our battalion going to Camp Borden, but that we would stay in Western Canada. So I managed to find a place in Victoria, and I moved my wife and at that time, two children, to Victoria. However, a month after I moved them, I was then told we were going to Camp Borden. I up with the battalion, and at least I had to stay back in Wainwright when the battalion moved, as there was a court-martial on which a soldier had been killed, and I was a witness on the court-martial, so I had to stay as a witness for this trial. And the trial actually went to the Supreme Court of Alberta, so it was the trial was held in Edmonton, and I stayed there. As I mentioned, the battalion moved to Camp Borden, and there wasn't enough accommodation for us there. We were scattered between the Remy lines and Provo lines, and we'd messed with the Remy in the Remy school mess. And our instruction was carried out in the latrines because there was no other place to do it. There was the biggest room available. And we had quite a problem there. And at the same time, we were still trying to get men to, or training men to go to Korea to replace the casualties with the 2nd Battalion. Then one day, General Simmons came along and wanted to know why. He said, what were we doing in Camp Borden? And so we told him this is where we were sent. So he said, you're not supposed to be here, you're supposed to be in Camp Ipawash. So the next morning I was sent by the CO, who was Colonel Herb Wood, to Ipawash to make a reconnaissance of it, find out what it was all about, and I did, and then 3 days later we moved the battalion there on the 23rd of November. And Ipawash was a cadet camp. It had been built during the war. It was quite a nice, it was on the shores of a lake, and it was close to the town of Thetford, I think it was, and I've forgotten the other name. But it was a nice camp. Of course, they hadn't expected us, so there was nothing there. The camp with the siding from around on the base of the huts had been taken away to allow the air to go under, so that meant that it was freezing cold on the floor. There was no insulation, so that had to be all put back. However, it was quite a good camp, better than being in Camp Borden, because we were at least on our own. We could set up our own mess, and we set up the men's canteen and things like that. And we were training as a battalion then without interruption at all. We came under the commander of Eastern Ontario area, which was in London, and they didn't bother us very much. They seemed to give us most things we wanted. Mm-hmm. And we spent a Christmas there, and then at the end of May or beginning of June, we were then told we were going back to Wainwright, and so I then proceeded to conduct the battalion back to Wainwright. I might say in every move that the battalion did, I moved them, the CO went ahead, and I was responsible for moving the battalion and all the trains, arranging the trains and things like that. So we went from Ipawash to Camp Board to Wainwright, and there was no problem. We had two train loads of troops. We got into Wainwright, and this time, instead of being in tents, which we had been the first time, there were permanent quarters for us. Mm-hmm. So we moved into those, which was quite nice. It was certainly more comfortable, and you at least had hot showers, when prior to that we'd had cold showers the year before. And the men felt much better, and we then went into training and lots of exercises. And again, sending reinforcements to the 2nd Battalion, including a good number of officers whom we'd hoped to take with us. The training continued throughout until September. And we'd been warned early in August that we were going to replace the 1st Battalion, which had then replaced the 2nd. So I should have said that was 1st Battalion we were sending officers for, because 1st Battalion had replaced the 2nd Battalion in 1951. That would be October 51, September, October 51. So we were now sending reinforcements to the 1st Battalion. And we were told we were going to around September, October to replace them. So we then started getting a bit more equipment in. The problem we had at Wainwright at both times in the 51 and in 52 was equipment. Mm-hmm. We had no bazookas or anything like that, which we were supposed to have. We had to set up pieces of pipe and that too. As I mentioned, our big problem was the equipment for training the soldiers, and I always remember one young lieutenant moving out in the field with his platoon carrying a stovepipe on his shoulder. It was to represent a bazooka, but it was the only thing he had. Mm-hmm. And here we were training, supposedly to go into action within about 2 months. And as I said, just before we about a month or so before we did a good career, we did start to get in a little bit more equipment. And then I think it was September of 52, I put the battalion on the trains that came into Wainwright, and I proceeded by train a day ahead of the battalion, as I was to be OC Canadian Troops. And I had with me three other officers, and we proceeded to Seattle, where we were met by the American Army Movement Control people, and we were put into a hotel for the night, and they explained to us what was to happen. We went down to the docks to see where the troops were to come in at, and the next morning around 11 o'clock the troops arrived from Wainwright. We embarked them and on the Marine Adder, and along with other American troops as well. There were quite a number of American troops, but there was the 3rd Battalion PPCLI complete went on the battalion, except for the CO and the IO and two or three of the company commanders who proceeded over to Korea by airplane to be there when we arrived. The trip across the Pacific was quite uneventful in lots of ways. We were all volunteers, the Canadians were, the Americans were all conscripts, and they couldn't understand the cheerfulness of our people and the obedience that we had and things like that. I shared a cabin with two other American officers, both lieutenant colonels. One was going over, he hadn't a clue what he was going to do when he got to Korea. He was just being, at least to Japan, he didn't know whether he was going to Korea or Japan or where, he was just being posted there. And the other one was taking a group of reinforcements over, and he didn't know where he was going either. They were very nice chaps, but they just couldn't understand our attitude at all, and the friendliness of our troops, and how cheerful we were, because they seemed to be so glum. We had quite an interesting episode there. The Americans always call all their meals chow, so they announce on the PA system, compartment A, or able chow, and because this kind of grated on our nerves, and one of the officers spoke to the whoever was in charge of this announcement there and said, couldn't he change it a bit? So it certainly turned out the next time, compartment easy, chow now, please. So that didn't grate quite so hard on the Canadian, but they couldn't understand us at all. We did PT every morning on board ship. I got permission from the captain of the ship to have the top deck for half an hour every morning, and we put the troops up there and we did PT, and the Americans just stood around open mouth. We couldn't understand it at all. And I knew we were going to be on that ship for 7 days, and that if we didn't, we'd just be flabby when we got there. And the troops loved it because they liked getting up there in the fresh air. Otherwise, they would have sat down below in their stuffy cabins and places. They had a good canteen on board, which is their PX, post exchange, and the troops got lots of things at a good price, cheap, much cheaper than they've ever seen them before. Mm-hmm. We arrived in Yokohama. We were met by the Canadian military attaché in Tokyo, who came aboard, Brigadier Morton, immediately came up to me and said, what complaints had I got, and things like that, and I said, none at all. I said, everything went off very well, and he was amazed that there weren't some of our troops in trouble on the ship. I said, no, not one of them got in trouble. So he went to speak to the commander, the captain of the ship, and I think he got the same report, because he came back to me, he said, well, now, Charlie, he said, you tell me the truth. And I said, well, we had no problem whatsoever, and the captain of the ship had given him a copy of a report that he'd written on the behavior of the Canadian troops, saying how well we'd done in that, and he just couldn't believe it. However, that was all fixed off. We disembarked and got on the trains and took the train trip to Kure, where we arrived. I can't quite remember the time we arrived, but we were met there and then put into billets in Kure. And the troops were then allowed to rest and straighten out, get things cleaned up, I was then suddenly called and told that I had to go to Korea, fly over to Korea with the some of the other company commanders that were with me. And so we were then driven down to Iwakuni, which is a seaplane base and airport and that. And from there we flew into Seoul. And was met there by the 1st Battalion, PPCLI, and we were leaving by their 2IC, and then taken up to the front line and shown everything that we had. You know, we spent a couple of days there, two or three days there before the battalion arrived. In the meantime, the battalion had got on the train to go down to Iwakuni, the same ones we had, and then they took a ship across to Busan, and then from Busan they took the train up to Seoul. And the train was this antique as some of the Canadian trains are, wooden benches and things like that, no comforts at all. But they were glad to get back and get up into the reserve area. We spent about 2 weeks getting prepared to take over from the 1st Battalion, looking at all the areas and that. And then they left and we moved into our positions. 1st Battalion moved out. I went down to Curie with the 1st Battalion to kind of say farewell to them on behalf of the battalion. Whilst I was down there, the Black Watch, who were on the left of the, at least who were on the hook position, the PPCLI was in reserve, was attacked by the Chinese, or North Koreans, or whatever you want to call them. And they were hit pretty hard, and the 3rd Battalion had to go in and help, and send a company in to help them to stabilize some of their positions. I missed all this until I got back the next day that I found this had happened. And then things were quiet, and we went into the line, and we had a quiet time. Reasonably quiet, a lot of patrolling in the various positions that we were in. And then early in March of 1953, oh sorry, I should mention Christmas of 1952. We were in the line for Christmas 52, but we managed to juggling around with the between the RCR and the Vandals and ourselves. We managed to get the troops out for Christmas dinner. And then Jerry Gosley was came over, and we had a good, he put on a good show for us. And that was just before Christmas. And then at Christmas, Elaine McAllister, I think it was Elaine, she's the wife of the famous band leader in Vancouver, who used to play at the Hotel Vancouver, Mark Kenning.
Mm-hmm.
She came over, and she was with us for New Year's Eve and sang and put on the shows, which was very good indeed. And she managed to get up to wherever the troops were. She didn't get up the front line, but she got troops back to listen to her concerts and that. And that added quite a bit of liveliness to the troops' lives. And then, as I was going to say, early in March, the Commonwealth Division was withdrawn from the front to come back into rest for the first time since they'd been in there and taken over by Koreans and Americans. And we moved back into a rest period where we did exercises and that. And it was at this time, just as we moved back, that Colonel Wood became very ill and was evacuated to Japan, to the hospital in Japan, and I was then appointed commander of the PPCLI, or acting commander of the PPCLI. And I was